Hey guys, it's Allie. Welcome back to Infertile AF, the podcast. This is episode 329 called Dr. Molly Quinn. This episode is brought to you by Belly. Are you thinking about growing your family? Whether you're just starting to plan or are actively trying to conceive, preconception health is key. That's where Belly comes in. Belly has vitamins to help both women and men optimize their health before pregnancy. With essential nutrients like folate, iodine, and zinc, Belly ensures your body is ready for this exciting next step. Belly goes beyond basic vitamins. Their unique formula supports reproductive health, hormone balance, and fertility, all while being made with the highest quality ingredients. Plus, Belly is created with only clean ingredients so that you can rest assured that you are making a safe choice for you and your future little one. When it comes to starting your family, take the first step with Belly. Give yourself and your future baby the best foundation for a healthy start. Visit bellybaby.com today and use code IAF15 for 15% off your first order. That's bellybaby.com, B-E-L-I-B-A-B-Y, for a healthier tomorrow. Belly Baby, because healthy beginnings start here. Thanks, Belly. All right, friends, I would love to encourage anybody listening to this to come check out Fertility Rally, which is the community and the space I wish I had when I was going through all of my infertility, miscarriages, all the things. We have 4 to 5 virtual support groups per week. We have 4 private Facebook groups. We do IRL and virtual events and so much more. There's hundreds of women who get it, who are there for you in real time and can help you navigate whatever it is you're going through. So come and join us. Check out fertilityrally.com for more info, or you can always DM me at InfertileAF Stories or at Fertility Rally on IG. Also, I'd love to invite anybody listening to check out one of our support groups and see if it's your jam. If you want to do that, like I said, DM me. You can check it out and we would love to support you. Also, I'm so excited to tell you guys that my second children's book, Beautiful Bird, is coming out this summer. So you can follow my Instagram for more updates on that. I will let you know as soon as it's available for pre-order, which is going to be very soon. But in the meantime, if you want to check out the OG work of art book, which is about my family's story and IVF, you can check it out at my website, which is infertileafgroup.com. Again, that's infertileafgroup.com. All right, so today we have another expert mini-sode. I love to put these in between all the other family building stories and infertility stories because I love to talk to an expert about a very specific topic. And today I had the pleasure of talking to Dr. Molly Quinn, who is a reproductive endocrinology and infertility specialist at HRC Fertility. And we are talking all about recurrent pregnancy loss. So this is something I experienced myself. We're going to talk about what exactly is recurrent pregnancy loss, how common it is, who is most at risk, what are the most frequent causes of recurrent miscarriage, and so much more. Some really good info. And as always, I learn something new every time I talk to an expert. So without further ado, this is Dr. Quinn on Infertile AF. Dr. Quinn, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
So we are going to talk about recurrent pregnancy loss, which is something that I experienced when I was going through my infertility journey. And so many people who are listening probably are going through the same thing or have gone through the same thing. So let's start with the basics. What exactly is recurrent pregnancy loss and how is it medically defined?
So medically, this is defined as having 2 or more clinical pregnancy losses. Different research studies have used different criteria, which makes it really confusing. And some people tack on words like consecutive, like whether it matters if you had a loss and then a successful pregnancy and then another loss or not. And I actually think that's a little bit of semantics and not so important. But technically, mm-hmm. recurrent pregnancy loss is 2 or more losses that are clinically recognized, acknowledging that to get clinical recognition of a pregnancy, you have to have seen a doctor. And so there are going to be a lot of people out there who have earlier pregnancy losses, and we all have different thresholds for initiating a workup, perhaps even prior to a point where somebody would have 2 clinical pregnancy losses.
Okay. So how common is RPL, and is there a certain like subset that is most at risk?
So unfortunately, recurrent pregnancy loss is common. If you look at the technical definition of this two consecutive pregnancy losses, it might be 5% of the patient population. And then there's a description of 1% having had three or more. I think it's a lot more common than what is recognized or even described in the literature. And some of that, I think, relates to the fact that we are building families later in life. And unfortunately, there is a higher risk for pregnancy loss as the age of the female increases. And so I think perhaps it's more common than the 5%. I would wager up to 10% patients have recurrent pregnancy loss.
Yeah, there's probably some that aren't reported too, or people, you know, don't even really know, you know, the term recurrent pregnancy loss. Cause I'll admit, I didn't know, I'd never heard of that before until like afterwards. You know, there's so many acronyms and we always talk about all the phrases and terms and it's like, you don't know it unless you're in it.
You're absolutely right. There's also just, I think, a degree of hesitance to talk about pregnancy losses and the experience. And I think I'm grateful for the fact that it's becoming more of a conversation, but it also means that we have to catch up a little bit in terms of our understanding.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So are there any like common misconceptions about miscarriage and recurrent loss that you would love to clear up right now, or any like common myths that you want to bust?
Yeah. So the thing that bothers me the most is that I see patients who come into my office feeling like they've done something to cause this, that it is the patient's fault that they have experienced a pregnancy loss. Inevitably, the patients I meet have gone back through what they ate, what they drank, what they did leading up to a pregnancy loss. And I want to reiterate and clarify that stress does not cause pregnancy losses, that what you eat and drink in most circumstances would not cause a pregnancy loss. Exercise does not cause pregnancy loss. And so I think if patients could just kind of take some of that burden, and this is, it's hard enough to experience a miscarriage, but the self-blame, I think, is the greatest challenge and something I really look to in our initial conversation, help patients to unload.
I love that you say that, because so many people, you know, over 325 episodes of this podcast, and anybody who talks about pregnancy loss, I feel like has some degree of, it was my fault, or what did I do wrong? And I don't know if we're just conditioned to think that way, but I'm so glad that when experts and doctors, you know, come out and talk about that, because I think it's so hard to go through it. And then adding that layer of like guilt, or, you know, putting the onus on yourself, it just makes it so much harder to navigate. So what are the most, from a medical standpoint, what are the most frequent causes of like a recurrent loss?
So the most common cause of a pregnancy loss is actually the same, whether it's recurrent or it's somebody's first pregnancy loss. And that is a genetic or chromosome imbalance in the pregnancy that does not allow it to continue to grow and develop normally.
So what kinds of tests and like diagnoses are you typically giving when somebody experiences multiple losses?
Well, the first thing is we try to learn as much as we can about the pregnancy loss. Sometimes it can be relevant. How far did the pregnancy make it? What additional testing was part of that journey in the pregnancy to the point of the loss? So specifically, some patients have had genetic testing on pregnancy tissue that could help to elucidate the cause for the loss. I actually encourage patients to not stop with that, because, of course, you could have a pregnancy loss due to genetic or chromosome imbalance, and then there could be some other issue that's setting somebody up for this to happen again. But I think the first point is to have a good conversation, to review records, to understand as much as possible about the pregnancy losses that have occurred, how far along they were, and then an individual's own medical history that might have some bearing on a cause for a pregnancy loss. With that conversation, we'll decide if there is kind of a relevant family history, if there is an indication to screen an individual and their reproductive partner, if relevant, genetic makeup, to understand if that's contributing potentially to recurrent pregnancy loss, to screen hormonal issues that could increase the risk for pregnancy loss, to screen for a very specific acquired autoimmune condition called antiphospholipid antibody syndrome. All of these things that I have mentioned, aside from the history taking, is really blood testing. Mm-hmm. And then there would be an indication to do some kind of anatomic evaluation to understand if there is a structural issue with the uterus that could be increasing the risk for pregnancy loss. or even for patients who have unfortunately experienced pregnancy loss, there could be sequelae from their pregnancy loss that would be relevant to a subsequent pregnancy, like retained pregnancy tissue or tissue from a DNC. So this is all information that we'd like to sort up when we're trying to understand why losses have happened and what the prognosis is for future pregnancies.
Can we talk about uterine abnormalities a little bit? What are some of the ones that you see and which ones might contribute to some sort of a loss?
Yeah, so anything that is taking up space in the uterine cavity where a pregnancy would need to develop could increase the risk for a subsequent pregnancy loss. So these are predominantly benign conditions, so non-cancerous conditions that are really impactful from the standpoint of ability of a pregnancy first to implant and second to grow and develop normally. So the things I think about would include polyps, which is like a skin tag inside the uterine cavity, or a fibroid, really common cause for pregnancy loss or infertility, which is where the muscle of the uterus is present inside. In this specific case, it would be inside the uterine cavity or projecting into the uterine cavity. If your fibroid is present but is not projecting into the uterine cavity, it may not be an issue for your fertility or for miscarriage history. I also think about prior procedures and how they could set you up for risk for recurrent pregnancy loss, like scar tissue in the uterine cavity from prior surgery on the uterus, or retained placental fragments, or retained products of conception or pregnancy tissue that can increase the risk for pregnancy loss, mostly because these things are taking up space or limiting the amount of space that would be available for an embryo to implant. And then finally, there are some patients who have a structural difference in how their uterus developed as a fetus that could increase their risk for pregnancy loss. They're actually born with a uterine structural difference that could increase the risk for pregnancy loss. And this is to some extent controversial in terms of what might be needed for a given individual. But if you have something called a uterine septum, it's like a wall inside the uterus. And if an embryo implants on a wall, it doesn't have the same kind of blood supply. It could make it harder for it to continue to grow and develop normally.
Okay. So if something like that happens when it develops on the uterine wall, is that a non-viable pregnancy for sure? Is there anything that you can do from a medical standpoint?
Yeah. So if an embryo implants in healthy uterine lining in somebody who does have a septum, we would think that the septum may not be as relevant, although it could impact the ability of the pregnancy to grow normally. So we do sometimes see patients who have structural differences in their uterus have malpresentation or breech pregnancies, for example, because there is a limited space for a fetus to be able to grow and develop. But if an embryo implants on a septum, we would think of that as a risk factor for pregnancy loss.
Okay. What's the point when somebody should seek answers and come to a doctor after pregnancy loss? Like, is it after one, after two, after more? I feel like sometimes, you know, women are hesitant, including myself, to see a doctor because you don't want to feel like, why are you here? It's not that big of a deal. You know what I mean? It's like you never want to feel like you're wasting a doctor's time, I guess. So when do you recommend people come in?
I think there are two separate answers to this. So the first answer has to do with kind of standard clinical guidelines. And that alludes to this diagnosis of recurrent pregnancy loss being two or more. And so I would say definitely if you've had two clinical losses, you should seek an evaluation. But it's not wrong to have a conversation with a single miscarriage. It is absolutely fine to get more information and figure out what testing might be indicated. I am never bothered by a patient who is seeking information.
I'm so glad you said that, Dr. Quinn. Thank you for saying that.
Part of our job, I think, as physicians is to facilitate a conversation, to educate patients. I have served as a clinical instructor in academic settings in the past. I like teaching fellows and residents. I also like teaching patients. And I think that there are a lot of doctors out there like me who like to educate patients. And you can come and have a conversation and we decide together whether additional testing is warranted at any juncture. I don't think it's wrong to seek an evaluation if you're just looking to kind of explore what options exist.
Okay. I feel like that makes people feel so much more comfortable like advocating for themselves. So thank you for being like that. And thank you for saying that. So let's talk about the emotional and like the mental impact of all of this. What have you seen and what kind of advice do you give people about navigating this time, like mentally and emotionally?
I encourage patients to include their team in their experience. So whoever that is, friends, family, licensed psychologists, professionals, to assemble a team, because this is not easy for anybody. Mm-hmm. Everyone who walks through the door of my office, regardless of where they are in their journey, is experiencing stress. Some of them actually meet criteria for clinical depression or anxiety. And going through this process has never made any of that easier. Mm-hmm. And so I think initiating a conversation with a professional is helpful. And also just being open to talk with friends and family and seek advice and support. So I think one of the things that I see as a recurring theme is patients constantly ask me, is it okay to tell my family yet about my pregnancy once we've established success? And, you know, I think the answer should be yes from the outset. It should be, you should be talking to them if you can, if you feel open to it, whoever that might be during your journey as well. Because if things don't go well, it helps to have people on your team rooting for you and helping to pick you up when you're down. So I agree that this is a huge difficulty because we don't talk about it so much. And the more we talk about it, the more people we include on our team, I think the easier for the individual and also easier for society, because unfortunately, miscarriages, they are common. Infertility mm-hmm. is common, and it can be so isolating mm-hmm. in any circumstance.
This episode is brought to you by Happy Mammoth. Are you feeling overwhelmed by hormonal changes? If you're a woman, you're definitely not alone. There are more than 1,000 hormone disruptors living rent-free in our environment right now, in our food, our water, the air we breathe, the clothes we wear, our skincare, and they all mess with our hormones. The good news? We don't have to suffer through any of it anymore, because now we have Hormone Harmony, a formula made only with herbal ingredients that are shown to reduce hormonal symptoms in women of all ages. Hormone Harmony is not just a hormone-supporting supplement. It's become a phenomenon. Women cannot stop talking about it on social media. In fact, a bottle of Hormone Harmony is sold every 24 seconds. And the biggest benefit? Feeling like myself again. That's what women mention over and over in their reviews. And there are more than 30,000 reviews for Hormone Harmony. Okay, guys, so here is the very exciting news. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code INFERTILEF at checkout. Again, that's happymammoth.com and use the code INFERTILEF for 15% off. Thanks, Happy Mammoth.
Yeah, I remember wanting, after my second loss, you know, got pregnant again and wanted to tell early on, because I was like, I don't want to go through the loss again and then have to be like, oh, by the way, I was pregnant, but I'm not anymore. I was like, I just want my crew like around me the whole time from the jump. So, you know, I know a lot of people want to wait till 12 weeks or, you know, that point. But for me, I was just like, I need people now. Like, you know, I need that support.
And the support is so important. And everybody's different in terms of what level of comfort they have, who is going to be on their team. But I think if you can find somebody to confide in this process and mm-hmm. to encourage an open dialogue, it can be so helpful.
Mm-hmm. That's why I've started Fertility Rally as well. You know, just a community of people that get it, that are going through it in real time. So another thing I wish I would have had when I was in the midst of it. But let's talk about treatment. So I know, obviously, you mentioned there's a lot of different causes for RPL, but what are some treatment options that are available?
So based on like initial testing, we may or we may not have identified a cause for recurrent pregnancy loss, which is a really important point. At least 50% of patients, I can't point to a specific cause. We can infer, we can say, well, at your age, at this gestational age, the most likely cause is genetic or chromosome imbalance in the pregnancy tissue, but we may not know for sure. And so for the patients for whom a cause is identified, it may be more clear. So if there's a hormonal issue like thyroid dysfunction or an elevated prolactin level, that's the breastfeeding hormone, then we treat the hormonal issue and hopefully send people off on their own if possible to conceive naturally. If there's an anatomic issue that might require surgical correction, that can be done as well. And maybe then patients can conceive naturally. For patients who have antiphospholipid antibody syndrome, that acquired autoimmunity, blood thinners, baby aspirin with Lovenox or heparin can be helpful to reduce the risk of a subsequent loss. For people for whom there's a mixed picture or the suspicion is that there's genetic or chromosome imbalance, they might decide to undergo IVF and screen embryos for genetic or chromosome balance with the idea that this is doing one thing to reduce the risk of a subsequent miscarriage if a miscarriage previously was thought to be due to chromosome imbalance. That may not be the right choice for everyone, but that is a common choice for patients who've had the experience of recurrent miscarriage.
Okay. So are there any promising new approaches or like research in this area or anything that's changed in the last handful of years?
I wish I could tell you we're on the way to a solution here. I think a lot of the issue resides in this idea that genetic or chromosome imbalance, which is associated with ovarian aging, is the culprit in most cases. And we haven't yet figured out how to unwind the impact of aging on egg quality or egg health. There are some good studies that are out there. There is a nice study at Stanford that has been conducted trying to look for other genetic causes, because some patients have recurrent pregnancy loss in which the genetic or chromosome makeup is documented to be normal. And so the thought is, maybe this is not a pages in the book sort of issue. Maybe this is a words on the page issue. Maybe we need more refined genetic testing to identify for a given individual or couple. But these are all kind of experimental stage and not really ready for kind of clinical application at this point in time.
Okay, such good info. And I love your empathetic vibe. Like, I feel like your patients are so lucky to be working with you. I'd love to end it on the note of, what message do you have for somebody who might be going through this, who might be listening right now, who's feeling really discouraged or feeling really alone?
I would say, don't be afraid to start the conversation. If that's starting the conversation with a trusted friend or a family member, or actually seeking medical advice, we are here because we want to help and we want to talk through and try to find what answers we can find, and use your resources so that you're not so alone in this process.
All right, everybody. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you learned something. And if there's anybody you know that could benefit from this episode about recurrent pregnancy loss, please pass this on to them. Thanks again to Dr. Molly Quinn and the whole team at HRC Fertility. And as you know, one of the things we talked about was building your team and your support network. So on that note, if you want to check out Fertility Rally, let me know. You can check out our website, which is fertilityrally.com. Or if you want to check out a support group or just want more info, you can always DM me at InfertileAFStories or Fertility Rally on Instagram. Also, follow both of those accounts for more info on my next book, which is called Beautiful Bird. I can't wait for you guys to see it. It's another family building story through ART. And if you want to get the first one, which is my family's story, it's called Work of Art, and it's on my website at InfertileAFGroup.com. Thank you guys so much for listening, and I'll talk to you soon.
Say big on your next project right now at Menards. From mold and mildew to stains and hard-to-stick surfaces, preparing your paint project has never been easier than with Bullseye 123. Zinsser Bullseye 123 Primer is an all-purpose, high-performance, water-based primer for interior and exterior residential, commercial, and industrial applications. Say big on Bullseye 123 Primer. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Say big.